The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 484, recorded on November 20th, 2017. Welcome to the 484th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 317th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonathan Alvin.
I am TJ Dunster.
And I am Scott Durr.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry, and we have some listener feedback.
Yay!
So, we actually had listener feedback from the one of the episodes before this, but it was a short one, and I didn't see it. There's a lot of news coming up because Black Friday is this week. And an even more important thing is happening. We have to start getting ready for the Game of the Year Awards, the official gaming podcast Game of the Year Awards. I already know what TJ is going to call the Game of the Year because he can't stop talking about it. So, but that's for another podcast. What have you been playing, TJ?
I've been playing a new indie from one of my buddies named Kevin Cole. The game is called Hack, spelled H-A-Q-U-E.
I guess because you have Dot Hack and you have Hack and you have Moria Hack. You have all these games that are named Hack. The Introversion Hacker game. I haven't played that in a while. I should at some point. So
yeah. So Kevin started this. He started this Kickstarter about 2 years back, and he's been working on this game for quite a while now. It's a roguelike. Turn-based RPG, from a top-down perspective, it's almost like the old Ultima games where, you do a move and based upon your move stat, all your enemies will do a move and then you'll do another move. And it's,
it sounds like turn-based would kind of eliminate rogue, what I think is the definition of what a rogue,
actually, Scott, Hack sounds like Moria and Hack. There was a Hack from the late 80s, early 90s, which was also called Moria, in which you had ASCII characters going around, and when you moved, they moved. So yeah, it's been a thing for the past 30 years.
Yeah, and in this particular instance, when the roguelike element of it is that when you start the game, you don't actually make your, there's all sorts of classes and weapons and all sorts of stuff to it, but you don't actually make your character.
Just like
instead, you're given three pre-made characters and you pick between the three of them. And, if that character dies, they're permanently dead and you start the game over with a choice of three entirely newly rolled characters.
Yeah. I mean, Moria was the first, actually, you know, it's called a roguelike because of Rogue. Moria was actually Rogue. They're both the same game. I just remember it as Moria more. And yeah, in that game, you know, you just try to go as deep as you can. I've never actually completed the game. Go all the way down and come all the way back. And at the end of every game, you'd have this little tombstone saying how far you got and how much level you got.
Yeah, very similar things going on here. Every time you jump in, the levels are randomized. It's a randomized dungeon, and you have to get from the start of the dungeon to the end of the dungeon without dying. And then you decide from there whether you save and quit and come back to it later, or you move on to the next level. And once you move on to a level, you have to play through the entire level, or you lose your character.
I remember playing Dungeon Hack on the Commodore 64, which is basically a more graphical version of actually it was Forgotten Realms Dungeon Hack. And that was basically sort of like Dungeon Master, a game on the Amiga. And Dungeon Hack was fun. Unlike this game, like unlike Rogue and Moria in this game, it was basically a 3D turn-based game, you know, in which, you know, you sort of like Might and Magic.
Yeah. This is a top-down, very, very pixelated, very old school style of game where it's like fully grid, fully pixel.
Oh, come on. And, if it was really truly old school, it wouldn't be pixel. It would just be A's and B's and capital A, a capital Z was a dragon, a lowercase z was a zombie.
He put a little bit of a visual flair into it, but he did sort of try to simulate that old school sort of Commodore 64, very old style, right down to actually putting the scan lines.
Are we talking Wizard's Crown and Temple of Apshai and all those games?
Well, we're talking down to actually simulating scan lines on the game screen.
Okay.
But it's really fun. Like, so the first time I played it, I rolled a werewolf, and
well, it's much more advanced than the old Rogue games then, because in the Rogue games you were just you and you didn't have any stats. You just wandered around with and try and find weapons and potions and stuff like that.
You still do that here, but you also start out with, like, the three characters you pick, they'll be a different race, a different class, and then they'll also have a pet with them that follows them along and can fight with them.
There are no pets in Rogue, damn it. You were alone. Your pet was the dragon that would instantly kill you.
And with the first one I rolled a human werewolf who is capable of transforming and getting higher attack and attack speed at the cost of they lose mana per turn. And then I got my hands on some nunchucks. And
a nunchuck wielding werewolf. Great.
Yes. A nunchaku wolf.
That sounds a lot like any number of anime.
Yeah, speaking of, you know, roguelike games, I used to play Castle of the Winds that was on Windows that was sounded about like this kind of a game style as well.
Mm-hmm. And I made it pretty far on my first run with the werewolf, but then I ended up... There's this thing where you get an anvil and you can combine two pieces of gear together, and so I thought I would try to make a better nunchucks with the nunchucks and another piece. But I ended up ruining it and accidentally making a piece of armor instead. And
there was no crafting in Rogue either.
It's really light crafting. Basically, you can just put two pieces of gear together and a new thing pops up.
Sounds more like Minecraft now. You just put two things together. Oh, look.
There's a lot of things going on here. There's actually a light little story, too.
That's definitely not Rogue. Rogue had no story. The story was you're in a town, you're going down into the bottom of the thing, you have to defeat whatever the major monster was, and then come back up.
Yeah, with this one, there's an old man that's like, "Hey there, have an adventure. Welcome
Wait
to Hat. Go out there and
here.
Kill
Hold
things."
Hold on, time out. He didn't say, "Come and listen for a while."
Well, he doesn't say that. He's basically like,
"Stay and listen."
This one is just like, "Get out there and kill some stuff. Have some fun." And then it changes up a bit, like, Kevin knows video games, and he's been around them for a while, long enough to sort of like, he's the kind of person that he has an understanding of it well enough that he knows how to subvert expectations and play around with the player.
Yeah.
And
stay a while and listen.
And there are some surprises in there. I don't want to spoil them, but the game has a lot of depth to it. It's got a lot of old school fun. It's got a pretty great soundtrack to it.
There was no soundtrack in Rogue either.
It's 2017, Jonah. Get with the times.
I like my RPGs silent with characters instead of people. Actually, it reminds me of playing Star Trek, the game, which also the Klingons were letters instead of actual things. And, you know, it was really fun. They should remake that game.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun with this, though. Like, on my second roll, I rolled a necromancer, and you can sometimes, when enemies die, they'll spawn corpses, and you can literally just pick one up and stuff it in your inventory. And,
well, that was in Rogue. I mean, you could hold an elephant in your inventory, five elephants, it wouldn't matter.
So what I would do is I would go along minding my way, unless things got really hairy, and then I'd throw down my stockpile of corpses and just start reanimating a zombie army right there.
Oh, I thought you said you threw corpses at enemies instead.
Nope, just chucked them on the ground and started reanimating some zombie minions.
Okay. How about you, Scott? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been playing Dark Cloud 2 and the Metroid Samus Returns 3DS game, along with Minecraft as well. So I've been playing a variety of different games.
Well, you already talked about Dark Cloud 2 last episode. Tell us about the new Samus game.
The new Samus game is very interesting. It's a, I guess, a reboot or a remake of the
Metroid 2
game from the Game Boy Advance. Or Game Boy, anyways. And you go back to the planet to, you know, wipe out all these Metroids, and you see that they've been evolving, and they have, I guess, as you kill them, they get more powerful as you go along. And there's some new abilities in there, like a spider ball where you can, you know, crawl along the walls and ceilings as a little, like, I guess you get little spider legs or something that helps you crawl up stuff. And you, of course, get the usual weapons, your freeze ray, your morph ball bombs and whatnot. But it's really interesting to play it on the 3DS because you have this nice map interface that's right there, and you can view all your different stats and powers to help you.
You should discuss the music in the game, too, because uses the music from both the Super Metroid and Metroid Prime.
Mm-hmm. So it definitely brings back memories of playing Super Metroid and Metroid. And I haven't played a side-scrolling Metroid since that game, Super Metroid. So it's really, it feels good to get into a Metroidvania-style Metroid again. Because Metroid Prime just didn't really have the same feel. And
it wasn't really a Metroidvania, it was just Metroid. I mean, Metroidvania is for games that share both Metroid and Castlevania.
Yeah.
So you're just playing Metroid.
Oh, yeah, just Metroid. But, I mean, I'm comparing it between Metroid Prime and the original Metroid games. It gets back to those classic nostalgic way of playing the game. And it's fairly done well on this console, and you get even another ability to swipe at enemies that charge you, and you stun them, and you can shoot them and kill them better. So there's more depth of strategy and tactics to use on enemies. And it's a good game.
I mean, the ironic thing is that the Switch is getting the short end of the stick when it comes to Metroid games right now.
At the moment, I think eventually they'll come up with a Metroid Prime or some sort of Metroid for the Switch. And, you know, if we're getting Dragon's Quest and Dragon's Quest Builders, I would hope Nintendo would continue with Metroid as well, not just Mario and Zelda, and maybe explore other IPs that they have. I mean, it's not like they only have Mario and Zelda.
Well, you know, I mean, they screwed up with Kid Icarus so many times. It's like, sometimes, if it doesn't have Mario or Zelda in the title, you don't know what to expect.
Yeah, it's really been a disappointment that, like, Kid Icarus 1 is on the NES is pretty much all we have.
Yeah. I'm gonna sit here liking Kid Icarus Uprising, and I don't care what anyone says.
Tell that to Paul. He'll shoot you several hundred dirty looks at you.
I will fight him and kill him on that hill because I ferociously love that game.
So you're the one fan. We finally found him. There was a rumor that there was someone who actually liked Kid Icarus Uprising, and we found him.
Mm-hmm. It's me.
Yeah. So as for me, I took advantage of Xbox Live's Gold, and I downloaded several games, including Tales from the Borderlands, a game I had no interest in because I really don't like Borderlands' story all that much. But I will say I really enjoyed Tales from the Borderlands. It was a lot better than I thought it would be. And it used the dual narrative really well, a lot better than Broken Age did. And a minor spoiler alert, the last episode near the last mission has you playing a fighting game with between two kaiju, which is something I did not expect.
I think the fact that Tales from the Borderlands is just, when you're doing a Telltale game, you've got to have story, and I think that's a big help to a game like Borderlands.
And it's really instead funny. Of just like, it's really, really funny. It's witty. It knows when to be weird, and it knows when to be outright funny, and it knows when to be subtle. And, you know, I was shocked. I was really shocked that Claptrap did not appear in it. They have another little robot, but it's more like Exuberant Witness from Halo 5 than it is Claptrap. Also, the choices in this game really have meaning because in the end, you're able to pick characters based on what you did for the, actually, it's not only just fighting two kaiju, but it also manages to put in a Super Saiyan element to it, too. I was not expecting to play Ersatz's version of Power Rangers when I first booted it up.
For my money, that finger gun duel.
Oh,
is
yeah.
One of the funny.
Okay, major spoiler here, but out of nowhere, it's almost like it's from Anchorman. There's a massive finger gun battle in which people are pretending to have weapons and shoot each other, and it just keeps escalating and escalating and escalating. And there's only two people who are not involved. One is a janitor, and the other one is just some douchebag executive. And it's like everybody is full in to the, and it doesn't come out of completely nowhere. But it is just friggin' bizarre.
It is, for my money, one of the best bits of video game mastery. I was gonna say visual mastery ever produced.
I would say it just comes out of nowhere and leaves out of nowhere. I mean, it does introduce the fact that they actually weaponize the finger gun late in the game, and but that's a long way to go just to. And it's Patrick Warburton is funny in it. He's playing the same character he almost always plays, but he's still funny in it. But you know, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the ending. And I'm not going to play it again, but I'm not going to say I wouldn't play it again at some point. I've been playing a lot of old games just to test them out on my Xbox One X. I'm reinstalling my Mass Effect games. They look nice. I mean, they're not built for 4K or anything, but the 4K, the Xbox One X still upscales everything. So there's that at least.
Nice.
That's good.
Did you ever get around to Crimson Skies?
No, I haven't. But I did on my PC, I'm going to start playing Alien Isolation, and I'll let you know what I think of that after next week.
Cool.
I've also started playing Dragon Age Origins, and just, it's one of those things in which it's for me like reading a book. You know, I already know everything in it, so I'm just enjoying myself. I'm using the cheat code run script kill all hostiles just to skip battling, because I don't need achievements and I don't care. You know, I'm cheating for a reason. I want the game to be short. The first time I ever played Dragon Age Origins, I finished it after literally 100 hours. Granted, I didn't know anything about the game. You know, it was my first time through, but still, 100 hours. Now I can blow through the game in like 20. So there's that. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Valkyria Chronicles 4 is mobilizing for deployment in the West in 2018, and this comes to us from a Sega press release. The Valkyria Chronicles series makes good on its grand return westward in 2018 with Valkyria Chronicles 4, a new mainline chapter in the saga for PlayStation 4, Nintendo Switch, and Xbox One. Return to a continent ravaged by conflict with a familiar yet refined tactical RPG battle system, a vibrant and evocative art style that portrays the living canvas of watercolors, and a gripping World War II-inspired story full of momentous triumphs, heartbreaking loss, and the unexpected hope for the human spirit. I'm going to say it's World War II-inspired because it always reminds me of what Yahtzee said about Valkyria Chronicles 3. he said it's they were fighting against Badolf Schmittler. The part overhead turn-based strategy, part RPG, and part third-time real third-person shooter Blitz battle system returns to the field. New features include an explosive new class called the Grenadier, numerous offensive defenses battleship. Oh, damn it. Numerous offensive defensive battleship support options, chances for a unit to have a last stand action before death, and more. Plus, fight the Imperial threat with more units on larger scale maps than ever before. The Canvas graphics engine blends visual elements of reality and imagination to create an expressive world filled with colorful emotions. Finally, the illustrious Hitoshi Sakamoto, original composer of the Valkyria Chronicles series and countless other emotional epics, returns to provide sweeping orchestral soundtrack for the game. I know a lot of people are excited about this. To me, it's the JRPG-est thing ever, which is just an observation. Have you guys played Valkyria Chronicles?
No, I have not.
I have played through the first one. I didn't make it through the second or third.
This game is your bread and butter, Scott. I'm surprised you haven't played this.
See, the thing is, Jonah, there's different variances of JRPGs, and there's the JRPGs that are just massive swords and attacking shit and scantily clad women and big explosions and stuff, and then there's the JRPGs that are good.
Well, this one is the typical. Well, this one, for one thing, is a tactical RPG. It's not a JRPG per se. It's a tactical RPG, sort of like Final Fantasy Tactics.
Actually, I would disagree with that. It's closer to XCOM than it is to Final Fantasy Tactics.
To say, yes. What I'm saying is that it mixes the RPG elements and the, you know, it's a lot of fighting in a strategy game, but it has a story wrapped around it.
I'm looking at a screen cap of this.
This is the archetypal teenager save the world type of RPG.
Yeah, that's definitely what this looks like.
It's a teenagers with funny hair saving the world again.
Yeah, but a bunch of teenagers. I mean, this is exactly what I would expect from Japan does World War II. You know, it's like.
Yeah, but the thing is that, like I said, this is not. This separates itself from Final Fantasy and others of its ilk because it has occasionally a more somber tone. And by somber, I don't mean like, what was the name of that World War One game? It wasn't a Japanese game either. Valiant Hearts. It's not Valiant Hearts, but it's also not Final Fantasy. It has less bullshit in it. Not much less bullshit, but less bullshit. And Final Fantasy has always been bullshit to me. And I'm including all the games in this series. I don't care how attached you are to them. They've always seemed like bullshit to me. Anytime you have guys with massive afros and hiding their chocobos inside them, that's bullshit.
But see, that's what I'm getting at. You're talking about everything Final Fantasy VII and up. You've never played Final Fantasy 1 through 6, which are nothing like what you just described.
Yeah, but I'm generalizing for humor, but, you know, it's... I will say, it tries to take a more, you know, it tries to balance the serious with, you know, the only thing I find amusing is that they didn't have the guts to make it World War II. And Yahtzee posits it's because Japan doesn't really want to talk about its role in that war.
Well, it just doesn't. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
If you're fighting Adolf Hitler as a Japanese company, it's like, oh, wait a minute. Weren't we on his side at one point?
Yeah, there's that too.
No, it's Badolf Schmittler.
I mean, yeah, I'm old enough to remember Bionic Commando where you blow up Hitler's face with a rocket launcher. Yeah. That was a Capcom game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually, now that I think about it, Scott, the story is sort of Tales in the Sky-ish. In which it questions a lot of things. It makes a lot of questions about the nature, political conflict and all that stuff. I mean, I haven't played Valkyria Chronicles 4, so I can't definitively say that's the point. But that's what the previous three games did. You know, it wasn't rah, rah, hoorah, hoorah, our side versus their side. They were a little more nuanced than that.
Yeah.
But they're really portrayed by Japanese, but by being portrayed by anime teenagers.
I mean, really, the typical part of it is that, like, it all starts in a small village, and there's this one dude who used to be in the war but doesn't do that anymore, and they get him to come back because the baddies attack his village and threaten his family. So it does have some very stereotypical beats to it, but it definitely goes a little deeper than just, like, these kids are the only ones who can save the world.
They're more like, these kids are the ones we're going to draft into our army.
More like, these kids get to suffer the horrors of a international conflict.
Yeah. I mean, it's not dark. It has dark implications, but it never really goes down, you know, into dark.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is that the one thing that Valkyria Chronicles 3 did that pissed off a lot of people is that people were able to attack when it wasn't their turn, and that really annoyed them.
Yeah, but generally speaking, it's been a pretty good and balanced system. It takes cover into account, it takes sight lines into account. When I say it's like XCOM, it really does take a lot of tactical consideration into it when you start positioning your troops and firing on and spotting or firing on enemies.
The other news I'd like to point out is actually coming out on Switch and Xbox One. This is the sort of game that would be PlayStation 4 and maybe PC. So it looks like, you know, Sega is casting it wide on this one, you know. It's sort of like, yeah, you know, we're going to involve the other two, one of whom has always been questionable with third-party support. We're going to support it. And the other one, you know, generally JRPGs haven't been big on it since, I don't know, not Blue Dragon, maybe Lost Odyssey. And they had the Xbox 360 had its one Tales game. Tales of Vesperia, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
And I think that was the last one. I mean, they also had Eternal Sonata and all that stuff, but then JRPG sort of fell off the map for the Microsoft console. So this is sort of like a return to, not that I'm saying that none of them have been released from the Xbox 360 or Xbox One. It's just been a while since something, a big, Japanese tactical RPG appeared on the system. Anyways. We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ. Actually, no. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Clicker Heroes 2 developer abandons Clicker Heroes 2 developer abandons microtransaction model citing ethical concerns. This is from Game Informer. In a letter to their players, Clicker Heroes 2 developer Playsaurus explains why they went with an upfront pricing model instead of free-to-play with microtransactions like the first game, citing both ethics and gameplay design as their main reasons. Games are inherently addictive, explains the developer. That alone is not a bad thing, until it gets abused. We made a lot of money from these players who spent thousands. They are known to the industry as whales. Great, if you're rich, please be my guest. But we don't want this kind of money if it came from anyone who regrets their decision. If it made their lives significantly worse as a result, unfortunately those who have a problem are usually in denial about it and would be too ashamed to ask us for a refund. We would give the refund in a heartbeat. It's not like we have artists drawing each ruby by hand. It costs us nothing but payment processing fees. Playsaurus also explains letting players feel like experience might be better if they spent money. More money feels terrible, and they do not want the game to feel like that's necessary. Clicker Heroes 2 is scheduled for PC and Mac for 2018, and I have to say, good on them for dropping this whole microtransaction
crap.
You
want me to be a little cynical, though? This game is not a mobile game. This is a PC and Mac game, and I'm pretty sure that they're not making as much money on PC and Mac as they would if they did it on a mobile.
Yeah, there are a few games that are on consoles and PC that have microtransaction, and I guess maybe PC people are a little try to avoid that kind of stuff, but they seem to be aware of that, you know. It's like, you're just milking these people their money, and that's all you're doing. You're not trying to make new content. That's basically what he's saying. Like, we're just milking these people. It's not about we need to make money to make more content. It's just, let's just milk these people. Let's put a fancy hat on a character and charge them $10 for a new hat or something.
Yeah, you know, I might qualify as a whale when it comes to Cooking Dash. Although I will admit $60 came from gift cards for Google Play, which I couldn't use on anything else. And the thing is that, you know, I never really have to buy anything. I mean, I retweeted something that TJ saw in which this player who's playing Star Wars Battlefront 2 got all of the characters spending just 20 hours of it and didn't drop a dime on microtransactions to get them, you know.
That's good.
No one is forcing you to do microtransactions. The only thing I really get annoyed if something like, I believe it was Candy Crush, remember, that charged you to go further levels?
Yes.
Yeah, they're called paywalls.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with loot boxes. I played and finished Shadow of War without paying a dime on them, you know. I'm not going to include getting a season pass as part of that. And I got the season pass because I knew I would want it either way. Now I feel a little bit of regret for not getting the season pass when it was $20 for Fallout 4. Because now I'm saying, do I really want to spend $15 on Far Harbor? I'm going to have to wait until there's a sale.
Well, Christmas is coming. I'm sure there'll be a good sale on it.
I guess. But, you know, loot boxes never really bother me unless it's pay to win. And then it's sort of like, well, but on a single player game, I don't care.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the biggest problems about Star Wars Battlefront 2 is that the moment people heard loot boxes, they assumed it was going to be pay to win. And that's just not the case. Everybody was ready to call foul and be like, well, this game is over. This game sucks. We're going to have whales in this game. And
this is why I never listen to Metacritic user reviews, because you don't have to buy a game in order to give it a rating.
Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what everybody did. Quite frankly, I don't give a shit as long as the game is good. I mean, I know people...
The game is wonderfully average.
Yeah. I've heard... if I was going to be going...
It's gotten 88 score highest, which, you know... Normally in a game, if the highest score is going to be like a 90 or 95, no matter what kind of game it is, but a good game will have really, really high scores. This one has middling scores and it's average. You know, I haven't played it. I haven't even played the single player campaign.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing, is I've heard good things about the single player. And at the same time, I've heard there are problems with the multiplayer. It's not like it's a perfect game by any stretch of the imagination. But the length that people were ready to go to explain to themselves that this was a scam was just absurdity.
And gamers are upset when people call them immature, entitled nerds, and that's exactly what they are. You know, if you don't want to be called immature and entitled, then stop acting immature and entitled.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really said anything about Battlefront 2 as far as if it's good or not, because you know why? I haven't played it.
That's why this entire thing with Shadow of War just irritated me. It's like, have you played it yet? No? Then shut up. Have you actually had to play, and I mean, in their minds, there was this paywall for Shadow of War in which you had to pay $100 just to get to finish the game, and that's simply not true.
Some people... they just hear the word microtransactions and
or they
their
think
blood
it should be
their
only
blood
for
boils.
Games that are free to play. You know, only free to play games should have microtransactions.
And the unfortunate truth behind video games these days is that they haven't changed price in years.
Yeah.
Coming up over a decade.
You want microtransactions? You should have been in the arcades in the '80s. You had to pay to play the game at all.
Oh yeah, I mean,
all
you ever heard
quarters
of...
wasted.
If you wanted to play something like Gauntlet, keep pumping in those quarters.
Mm-hmm.
You want to continue the game? Keep pumping them in.
Come up on that boss in Metal Slug that is notoriously just the quarter eater boss that is impossible to beat on one coin, no matter how hard you try.
Or let's take Street Fighter 2. You know, hey, you want to continue playing? Pay the 50 cents.
Mm-hmm. So many allowances, gone, lost to the sands of time.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't regret it. And, you know, if you're having fun, you won't either. I mean, that's the way it is. Although it did make games incredibly hard simply because they wanted you to spend the quarter. But you know what? I beat Dragon's Lair on single quarter and Space Ace on the hardest level on a single quarter just to show off. And that's what it earned me.
Three count bout was practically impossible, but it was the best wrestling game that Neo Geo ever put out, and I keep wishing they would put it out again.
Oh yeah, they have. I mean, all the Neo Geo games are coming out on Xbox Live Marketplace, all of them.
I don't think I've seen Three Count Bout land yet.
It's there. I mean, every single Neo Geo game is coming out on Xbox. It's like, you know, you want Metal Slug X? Well, it's there. You want you want Neo Geo Dig Dug? It's there. Every single Samurai Showdown, every single, and it's like, you know what I really enjoy? I really enjoy reading the reviews from people who have been buying them and playing them. It's like, it's just like, you know, old school fun. You know, so all of these ports are faithful and people are really enjoying them. So if it isn't on, and I'm pretty sure that they're on PSN too, I doubt they would want to miss that piece of a pie. But like I said, if it isn't out now, it's going to be out because every single Neo Geo game is coming out on downloadable for $8.
Anyway. Most baseball games on the arcades got you like 3 innings. You didn't even get a full inning game.
Oh no, I remember baseball. It was called baseball or something like that, which was a quarter per inning.
Ugh, that's even worse.
But the thing that people loved about it is it saved your stats. Of course, people had ridiculous stats. They were batting 500 with 200 home runs and 400 ABs. You know, but that's the nature of the game.
Nice.
Anyways, we're going to move on to TJ's favorite topic. Well, one of his favorite topics. Go ahead, TJ.
Rainbow Six Siege is getting a high-tech ninja named Vigil from PC Gamer. The Rainbow Six Siege Season 4 update will bring 3 new operators to the game, including 2 from South Korea's 707th Special Mission Battalion. The first, a hacker named Dokebi, was partially unintentionally revealed earlier this week. Her compatriot, a high-tech ninja named Vigil, was more officially unveiled today. Based on the few details revealed in his biography, sounds like a refugee from North Korea. His brother, quote, drowned during their escape, and his mother was left behind to die in the jungle. And his father committed suicide after discovering that, quote, political asylum wasn't all it was cracked up to be. Chi Kwong, however, joined the Republic of the Korea Navy, qualified for UDT, SEALs, was chosen for the 707th, and ultimately became his country's top selection for the Rainbow Six team. Vigil is a defender who carries a K1A SMG and BOSG 12.2 shotgun as primary weapons, backed by the C-75 and SMG-12 secondaries. He also has a new trick in his repertoire that's bound to catch opponents unaware. Sites are speculating that he'll have a stealth field of some sort that renders him invisible, or at least very hard to see, for a short period of time. A character who can move through Siege, a game particularly about spotting and information, unseen, would shake things up pretty dramatically. But that appears to be what Ubisoft is going for. Quote, we wanted operators that are going to be able to play with intel and counter-intel using the aspect of our game that is not explored. Game designer...
Guillaume
Essoufoui said. The Season 4 characters, along with a third character, will be fully unveiled during the Pro League Finals, which will be broadcast this weekend, November 18th and 19th, on Twitch.
Yeah, that was this past weekend, and the third operator was a Polish operator, I believe, named Zofia.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of news coming out about Rainbow Six Siege, but you can discuss this one first.
Yeah. So, I mean, I already think about like the play and counterplay options that you would get even if you did have a character that could remain even close to unseen. First off, that character would be a camper's delight, because they could sit in one corner and pop people off that went by that didn't happen to notice them. Second off, it would depend on if they were on defense or offense, but the Brazilian female operative, I don't know if you guys recall, but I've talked to her about her before. She has a thing where if she catches a offensive character and interrogates them, she reveals all of their locations at once for her entire team. And I think that would be like something where if you're dealing with this type of character, you would almost have to have her on your team. And so it's really cool. I think it's really neat to see just like those guys at Ubisoft are doing a good job with building character archetypes that like just like come into play and change up the field dramatically.
Right. So there's also a new DLC that's called Outbreak, in which you can take on the role of a biohazard specialist. And yeah, it's basically Left 4 Dead zombie sort of stuff, but you know, it's pure co-op and it's a change of pace from normal gameplay, which I think, you know, even if it weren't zombies and say vampires or whatever, it's nice to have something that completely does a change up in gameplay.
They had a thing a while back when the game started where you basically took on all these little challenges and then you had a biochemical weapons attack where you had to go in with other operatives and kill enemy, basically AI controlled terrorists. And they haven't done that since the game launched. Like, they haven't gone back to that in any sort of way. So it's interesting to see them finally return to that after so long since the game's come out.
Yeah, there's going to be two new maps set in Morocco and Italy coming out next year, and a remake of a map. And those characters we just talked about, they're three of the eight new operators that'll be released.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be another great year. This is year three on Rainbow Six Siege, and I don't think that anyone that didn't know, like, I was on board from day one, and so I saw what they were building here, and this is where I expected them to be. But I don't think anyone from the
end. It was more of a rescue than anything else. I mean, Rainbow Six Siege stumbled out of the gate badly, and it took its time. You know, well, other multiplayer shooters are coming out too. Keep in mind, they were squished between Call of Duty and Battlefield and also Titanfall, the first Titanfall. It was not pretty.
Yeah, and to see them come this far to a year three and the scene, both just like as far as just like regular play and competitive play, is flourishing.
Yeah, and just to add, the year three season pass will be available on December 12th for those who are interested. That'll also discontinue season two customization items. So if you want something there, you better act quick because they won't be available anymore.
Absolutely.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And, I know, Scott's ears are going to prick up at this one. Minecraft is adding tridents, shipwrecks, dolphins, and coral reefs in spring 2018. And this comes to us from PC Gamer. Minecraft's waters are currently a bit lifeless. If you're not building an underwater base or raiding an ocean monument, then there's little reason to dive below the surface. That will all change next spring with the arrival of the update Aquatic, which adds shipwrecks, dolphins, and coral reefs. The update will split the oceans into biomes, the team said on Minecon Earth conference, with a different type of fish, coral, and kelp depending on the temperature of the water. You'll be able to catch fish in a bucket and move them around so you can build giant aquariums in your base. The new structures, including shipwrecks and icebergs, will hide treasure. Dolphins will leap from the sea and guide you to that treasure, which is nice of them. Tridents are weapons that you can use for both melee and ranged attacks. Throwing them will spear your target, but it means you'll lose the weapon forever unless you enchant the trident so that it comes back to you like a boomerang or Mjolnir. Once you got that enchantment, you'll have a weapon that you can use virtually any situation. You'll also be able to enchant the weapon to let you dash short distances in the water or in the rain. Bubble columns will liven up underwater locales, while new physics rules will ensure that water interacts properly with slabs and fence posts. The development team also announced the results of a fan vote and on what mob they think should be added to the game next. And the winner is a flying stingray that attacks you if you hadn't slept in days. In other words, this is one of those, you should probably stop playing for a while. You've been playing too long sort of enemy. The enemy doesn't have a name yet, spawns at high altitudes, and is attracted to insomnia. So if you hadn't had some shut-eye for a while, a group of them will swoop down and try and eat your flesh. The bad news for the 4K super-duper graphics pack for the game, it was meant to come out this year, but now you have to wait until 2018 to make Minecraft prettier, or just download one of the many fan-made shader packs.
Yeah, so, I saw the announcement of this, the whole Minecon Earth thing that was on Saturday. And it was interesting to watch. They had some music videos and some animations and stuff, and they had Will Arnett hosting with Lydia Winters. But the update itself, though, is really awesome, and that's really what we care about. One of the biggest controversial things is the water physics changing, because they're concerned about a lot of mob farms changing or not working, because they use signs and posts to block water, and now the water's going to just go right through the signs. And
stupid real world physics. How dare you come into our game? I've seen water acts in Minecraft, and it doesn't work that way.
Right, it doesn't, and so that's going to change things. But you know what? Really, actually, if
you move on, I just think that, I would suggest to Microsoft to have a lever that allows people to decide that they don't want the new physics engine. You know, just like, I want this map to be old school, and you can have a new school map, which it does work that way.
Well, yeah, you can use old snapshots or old Minecraft versions for old maps and whatnot. Sure. So you don't have to use 1.14. You can stay in 1.12 or 1.08 or go to beta, whatever, or alpha, if you really feel like going that far back. So that is an option. At least I know it is for Java. I'm not sure about the other editions. But the aquatic update looks like it's introducing a ton of stuff. The coral reefs look great. The kelp looks great. The fish. I love the dolphins. They're jumping around. They can guide you to treasure or at least to the shipwrecks. And I'm looking forward to the new effects. And I think that the status effect fatigue is what's going to happen if your character hasn't slept in a bed. But it's not going to be that big a deal if you're not in a high altitude area like extreme hills. If you're down on the low desert or swamp or whatever, and or underground, the thing can't get to you or won't even spawn. So it'll be interesting to see when it does show up.
It sounds like they're making the game bigger without actually increasing the size of the map.
Yeah, definitely. This update has been long overdue because the oceans have been pretty much lifeless. I mean, they added the water temples that helped a little. But now we have this whole coral and kelp and dolphins, and there's going to be different ocean biomes. There's going to be like tropical and iceberg, and it's going to be really cool.
Can you explain bubble columns?
Yeah, magma cubes that are on the bottom of the water. There's going to be these underwater ravines, and there'll be little magma cubes in there, and they will have little bubbles coming up, and they'll disrupt your boat and make you sink, or at least you fall out of your boat. And they can also make items float up, so that you have an item elevator right there. And that looks cool. I love that, how that looks. You have this just wall of bubbles, so you could actually use that for decoration too, hopefully. So that'll be a nice addition as well. The fish bucket's gonna be cool. I'm gonna definitely make an aquarium.
Now you have a group of people that you play with. Have you been discussing it with them?
Oh yeah, we're actually pre-making an aquarium site to put these fish in once it's introduced. Cool.
Anyways, we do have listener feedback from two previous episodes. I will do the first one because it's just a single sentence, and this comes to us from long listener Donovan. Actually, the other guy has also been listening for a long while too. And we were discussing the mini SNES, and Donovan just simply says, "I wanted Killer Instinct on the mini SNES." Guess why that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Microsoft owns the lights, and they have a pretty good Killer Instinct thing going. As a matter of fact, I think the new year either debuted or is about to debut. Year 3, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just going to say Raspberry Pi, Donovan. Raspberry Pi. Emulators.
Well, guess what? If you have an Xbox 360, Windows 10, or Xbox One, you can play Killer Instinct, because it's also free to play, and you can just buy characters if you want to, or get the season pass for them. Okay. So anyways, we're going to move on to the next letter. Go ahead, TJ.
All right. This comes to us from Ralph, from episode 482. Hi, all. Thanks for the episode. I really enjoy your podcast already several years. I have a question. What I wanted to ask since several episodes. At Jonah, why do you start nearly every sentence with, here's the thing? Maybe I don't get it. Maybe because I am not a native speaker, but it sounds strange. No offense. Hug.
The reason is that it's my catchphrase.
It practically is.
Actually, my catchphrase would be, and I'm trying to cut those out of the podcast, because that's a catchphrase I don't want is,
Speaking of which, sorry. I would love if you, all of you, could talk more about old games, gaming flashback especially. Games you played during your youth. Which games fascinated you? Which games do you hate? Which games did you not finish because they are too difficult?
Okay, let's stop for a moment. So rather than doing fascinated or hate, let's have that as the question of the week. What game did you not finish because it's way too hard? Go ahead, TJ.
I don't think I've ever not... Well, hold on. Oh, give me a second on this.
How about you, Scott?
Soul Reaver. Okay. I just had to stop. It was just like, you know, I there was this water level, and I hate water levels. Everybody hates water levels. And there's these water vampires, and I have to walk along this stupid wall, and it was just like, forget it, I'm done. I was just too frustrating. No, thank you. I was done.
For me, it's Psychonauts, and that's why I'm playing again with the cheat code to make myself invincible, just so I can finish, watch it. I've seen the ending on YouTube, but now I just want to experience it for myself. So yeah, I'm playing Psychonauts. And when time comes, I will use the cheat code to make myself invincible, so I don't have to worry about the unfairness of the very last level, two levels. And, you know, TJ, if you've played Battletoads, that's your answer.
No, I beat that game.
Really?
Eventually. Yeah, I'm the type of person that throws myself headfirst at an obstacle until the obstacle falls down or I pass out.
Did you get it on the Xbox 360 so at least you could get the achievement for beating Battletoads? So
no,
you could prove it and say, look, motherfuckers, I beat Battletoads. Top that.
Nah, I did it on the Nintendo. Oh. But the game that I didn't finish, and there's really never been a game that I stopped playing because it was too difficult. However, there has been games that I stopped playing because they were frustrating and I didn't like them.
That's a distinction without difference, just so you know.
And that was the biggest one of that. Well, there is a difference, and I'm going to explain it with this. It was Majora's Mask.
Wow.
I love the Zelda games. I've played through almost all of them, even Zelda 2 Link's Adventure. Link's Awakening, sorry. Or wait, was it Link's Adventure? I don't know.
Yeah,
anyways,
it's Link's Adventure.
Okay. Yeah, Link's Awakening is a different one, and I've beaten that one too. But I didn't beat Majora's Mask because the water temple is complete and utter nonsense, and I hate it.
All the water temple, all the water levels are terrible.
The water temple in Majora's Mask is a particularly nonsense. Like, I can overcome a water temple, but this one is where you keep in mind Majora's Mask is the game where you're on a 3-day time limit for the mm-hmm. for the game, and the water temple in Majora's Mask takes all 3 days several times for you to complete it, and I hate that you have to go back 3 days time to solve puzzles over and over again to get to inch a little bit closer to the boss each time. That was it was one of the first times in my life where I very much realized that this game does not respect my time and I'm not interested in trying to complete it.
Welcome and to so I Nintendo.
I love them and I give them all the credit in the world for a lot of their stuff, but that Majora's Mask Water Temple just like I was not interested in it after a certain time. It sucked the magic out of it. It sucked the magic out of the game by like making me complete repetitive tasks over and over. If there's anything I've mentioned on this show, and anyone knows me about this show, it's that I hate chores in video games, and I hate having to do the same thing for long periods of time.
That's why I hate games that have maze levels in them.
And that's not something that it should exist in a Zelda game, in my opinion.
And the later Zelda games just played the game for you practically and told you what you're supposed to do every single step of the way. Yeah, well, that's why Paul was pissed off at them. And they didn't fix that until Breath of the Wild.
Wind Waker was pretty much one of the last good ones before Breath of the Wild.
I thought Twilight Princess was okay.
Well, yeah, it was okay.
The reason for that was that it was the first Zelda game in a long while. As a matter of fact, it was the first Zelda game since what? Since Wind Waker, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I skipped Wind Waker, so it was Ocarina for me, so even longer wait. And so I was like, I want to play Zelda.
Wind Waker was the predecessor to Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag. Anyways, continue with the letter. Do you think about ever playing games on Twitch?
Do I?
No, that's the part where you have to listen to read the rest of the letter.
Oh. Do you ever think about playing games on Twitch? Something like Let's Plays?
I do. And I just did. Well, now I have to make sure it's Twitch because the Xbox One X forces me to go into Mixer. But I started doing one for Mass Effect, and I had to stop, and I'm probably going to restart it because there's so many funny things in the game, and it tries so hard for you to care about characters you know that are going to die before the first mission is over, like like Jenkins and Nihilus. But yeah, I mean, and I announced it on Twitter, which is why you should follow me on Twitter, damn it, if you really care. At Jonah Falcon, I will say I'm on Twitch or Mixer. Come watch me.
I've been on and off of Twitch several times throughout the last couple of years, and mostly it's a matter of interest and time for me. I am coming to a situation where I'm going to have a lot more time on my hands to do that. And I really do want to play more indie games on Twitch. Like, that has always been my jam. I love playing games like Owlboy and Hollow Knight and Hack, and I would like to share those games with other people more often.
You know what we could do is we could actually have a multiplayer game on Twitch or Mixer.
Which game?
I don't know. We have to figure out one.
That sounds interesting, though.
It'd probably have to be a PC game because we all have PCs.
Mm-hmm. It'd probably have to be Wasteland 3.
Well, that hasn't come out in a while.
I'd
rather do an old game.
I guess
there's
Civ 6 in the meantime.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's your deal. That's the Turncast. You already do that with the Turncast, Scott.
Yeah.
Although, I'd probably be amused at me hulking out when another civilization decides to use me as cannon fodder and watch me just wipe the mat with them out of pure anger, which is what happened in the first Turncast that I did.
Mm-hmm. You became the lawnmower man.
Yeah, the Mongols should have never messed with me. Everything became about me taking the Mongols and taking them out to the shack and beating the living hell out of them. Anyways, keep going, TJ.
So I'm gonna skip out. Wait, do you want me to do the Discord channel one?
No. Or do you sometimes play online games with your fans?
Or do you sometimes play online games with your fans? Maybe a Discord channel or play Song Aims together?
Song Games. I'm hoping he meant Song Games.
I meant play.
I would not mind doing Rock Band on, what's it called, online.
They just had their 10th year anniversary.
Poor poor harmonics.
Yeah, I'm going to assume they might make a Discord channel and play some games together. I don't know. I slip in and out of Discord as well. I'm all over the place on social media and other things. I wouldn't be opposed to playing games with other people.
Yeah, I'm on Discord as well, and obviously Skype.
Just picture us having a boring gameplay in which we're doing Minecraft, and he's and Scott is giving us the long ass tour of his thing. Here, now here's where we have the conveyor belt to dig out the earth, and blah 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 blah. Oh, and here's the aquarium where we're going to be storing dolphins. I'm kidding.
I bet Scott has a pretty nifty setup for
Thank
as long
you,
as he's
TJ.
Been playing.
But he does. I mean, here's the thing. He's part of a group, one of many Minecraft groups. So they just collaborate and work on the thing. I mean, I've watched groups do that. It's kind of fun to watch people talk about what's going on while they're doing whatever and digging and stuff like that. But I don't have that kind of time commitment.
Yeah, and we joke around and, you know, so it's make it entertaining and lively. It's not just, you know, place a block here, you know.
Let me ask you a question with your group. Do you have certain sections that are all just you? Like, this section over here is only for Scott and what Scott wants to do.
Yeah,
not part of
yeah, we'll have areas where a player goes and builds their own house, or, you know, castle or whatever, and or city-state, as it were. and then they own that area.
At
that,
some
you know,
point,
they,
you know what? You know what should happen? At some point, they should make it possible for sort of like a pseudo MMO in which people can have copies of their thing and network them all. So that's sort of like when you just keep going in one direction, you eventually go into another person's realm with, you know, that you can do anything you like because it's not their real realm.
God, that would take so much coding to do though.
Yeah. Well,
like not only just like make it so that you could connect to worlds, but like make certain connections happen to where like,
you know, I think it's going to be inevitable, but it's going to be like in 2030, you know, when we have giga what's called hertz processors, and you know,
I think they already do that, if I'm understanding what you're saying, because there's this there was this
just an open world that's comprised of people's things, but all in one seamless world, you know.
Yeah, they have a. I'm going to say World of Warcraft just because it's easier to as an analogy, but there's a World of Warcraft map on there, an MMO map, and you have these dungeons.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about. Anyways, let's move on.
That's fine, yeah.
I know you have family.
Crazy things.
There's a lot of things on Minecraft. I saw the replica of the full-size one-to-one replica of the Starship Enterprise and the cell phone that's made in Minecraft
and like
all that stuff.
5 or 6, 8 years ago.
The only thing I like looking at more than Minecraft is Planet Coaster. Like seeing what people put together in Planet Coaster, it's the Minecraft of roller coaster simulators.
I'm
a huge roller coaster fan, and you know, a Roller Coaster Tycoon fan, and I still haven't investigated. I really should, you know.
Absolutely, like I got to sit down and talk with those guys at E3, and just like even at that time, they were putting in a new console.
Wait a
that
minute.
Allowed you
Hold
to...
on. Speaking of E3, have you talked to the lead designer of Siege about season 3?
No, but I'm going to have an opportunity to soon because I'm actually getting into a little bit of a project that's going to delve a lot more into esports.
Okay. Because I gave you that contact for a reason. Damn it! Use your contact.
I know. But like, I wasn't with like a crew that would be able to handle that the work on that properly. But I'm about to be.
Okay.
And I'll have more on that later. Anyways, I got to sit down with the dudes at that work on Planet Coaster, and even at that time earlier in E3, which was I guess that was June, right?
Yeah, it's June. It's mid June.
They were just putting a console in the game that made it so that you could set various effects around your theme park on timers. So like cool. at a certain time of day, firework, you could set it up so a fireworks show would go off.
Yeah.
And various rides would be set up around that fireworks show and like just all sorts of different effects. And they also added mini screens into the game that you could actually embed embed video files into, so you could like make advertisements in your park. Like,
you know, that reminds me of, there was this article that we didn't do, but I really want to do, and that's the Visual Novel Maker, in which you can make your own Japanese visual novel. I'm going to be all over that.
That kind of reminds me of the idea from the movie Big, where Tom Hanks' character was talking about making interactive comics, and you can write your own stories. That sounds cool.
Jonah Falcon. Hentai doujinshi hopeful.
I'm not going to do that. Yeah, I'm not going to do that kind of visual novel. There was one who had a horny dog who had an erection all the time in this story, and I forgot what it was. I know that Linkara did a review of it. He was not pleased with that aspect of the game.
But yeah, moving on to the last bit of this.
No,
I know you have
what's it called? This one we're talking about, you know, there was this dog getting a massive erection and he was looking at me kind of funny.
I don't know. I don't want to know what you do in your free time, Jonah, with peanut butter.
That was a review on Linkara, top the fourth wall, damn it. I will freely shout him out. I'll shout out Giant in the playground. They're currently on issue 1015 on the Order of the Stick, and I'm actually waiting to see what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, do you guys read Order of the Stick?
I do not.
Oh, no, God. Well, here's the good thing. All the issues are online. So you just go there, watch issue number one. Although I will say the first like 100 issues are basically a parody of doing a D&D campaign. But then it has the server system in which it gets really poignant and sad and funny and all that stuff. And you really get invested in the characters. The Order of the Stick is a black hole, which you will never be able to escape from. You know, for other people, it's Homestuck. For me, it's Order of the Stick.
For me, it's Steve Lichtman.
I don't know that one. You know what? Actually, one webcomic that had a beginning and an end, which I really liked, was the Life and Death of Gordon Froman. Concerned Life. It's based on a guy who was the guy who wrote the letter to Breen that he wrote read aloud, and it's basically the anti Gordon Freeman.
Nice.
It's hilarious. Yeah. You have to read that. But, Concerned.
But yeah, on the last end of this this letter from Ralph. I know you have family and fans like me who live in a different time zone and are not nearly able to participate all the time, but in case of Twitch, it would be possible to watch afterwards. I don't know if you know this about me, Ralph, but I don't sleep. Sleep is for the weak. And
he does live five hours ahead of you, though.
I'm working all the time on stuff on here, so I'm almost always somewhere around here.
That's why you do that Roger Wilco meme, huh? Sleepless in the time capsule. Whatever.
Yes. Yeah, that's one of my running jokes. I actually took a screen from Space Quest. I think it was
three.
One? It's three.
Three. Yep.
And it's Roger Wilco waking up and just staring up into the darkness of wherever he is in his little space bed. And me posting my candid midnight thoughts. But yeah, I mean, I don't see why it's not possible that we could fiddle with stuff like that in the future if we really wanted to.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That said, I might anyway. So, I mean, if we announce it on the show, keep an eye out for me. I'll let you know when I'm going on Twitch with my new plans. And I'm sure Jonah will, too.
Sure. Why not? Now, TJ's going to sing the Ballad of the Star-Crossed Miner. I wonder who gets that reference. If you get that reference, you're old or really ultra nerd. Do you understand the Ballad of the Star-Crossed Miner? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I wish I did. That might be before my time.
Oh God, it was the first time. It's the first time that many people actually cried during a video game.
Oh.
Because it was Floyd's favorite song. It was part of an Infocom text adventure game from Planetfall. But anyways, last part of the messages. So far, please go on and do a lot more episodes. Thank you. Greetings from Germany, Ralph. And his is the German spelling of Ralph, which is R-A-L-F.
I can dig it. It's like SNK's Ralph, King of Fighters.
Oh, okay. I see. I had no idea because I don't play SNK games because their bosses are the shit and I don't want to deal with them. those games are made by sadists.
But they have some cool characters like Ralph.
SNK fighting games should not be legal. They should be war crimes. That's my opinion on them.
If we didn't have SNK games, we wouldn't have Guilty Gear, and I can't live in that world.
Here's the thing, folks. We're giving you all these things to Google. Google, Planetfall, The Ballad of the Star-Crossed Miner, and SNK fighting games. And actually, there's a trope called the SNK boss or something like that. SNK boss difficulty or SNK boss syndrome, maybe? I think it's SNK boss syndrome. No, just SNK boss.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a term for any boss that is just like in Dead or Alive 4 with What's-Her-Face was just this green thing who took off 2/3 of your life with a single attack.
there was a character, the boss in The Last Blade, Suzaku, could do one swing. It was just a heavy strike, and it would erase pretty much 3/4 of your life bar in one shot.
Von Kaiser. And that was from Punch-Out, no? What was Von Kaiser from again?
Oh, Von Kaiser was the German guy from Punch-Out, but I think you're thinking of Bald Bull.
No, Von Kaiser in Punch-Out pulled out a machine gun.
Whoa. What Punch-Out have you been playing?
You think I'm kidding, but I'm not. He.
I remember him. I do, but I do not remember him bringing weapons to the ring.
I think that was a joke from Brawl in the Family. Von Kaiser pulling out a machine gun. But yeah, the other trope is the computer's an unfair bastard.
Mm-hmm.
Scott knows all about that. If you've played Civilization, you know what it means. Because here's the thing about Civilization, when they wanted to increase the difficulty, they didn't make the game smarter, they just made it cheat.
Yeah, give the AI bonuses instead of making the AI think smarter.
Oh yeah, well guess what, it gets text 3 times faster than you and
mm-hmm.
That's
and gets 5 units at the very beginning and just all sorts of crazy shit that it doesn't need.
5 units, 2 of them are, like, 3 of them are settlers.
No, by the time
exactly.
But by the time, 100 turns pass, you have archers and they have Minutemen. But anyways.
Or India with its just oppressive march of elephant cavalry.
Threatening with nukes. You know, be careful because his words are backed by nuclear weapons. Gandhi has nukes and he's not afraid to use them. Anyways, thanks for the letters. We hope you write in because it's a lot better podcast when we know that people are actually listening to this podcast.
Yes, thanks for writing in, guys.
And we're not just jerking each other off.
Oh.
I mean, I know people download the episode because I can see how many downloads we have. But it doesn't mean we're actually being listened to because all it might mean is that someone forgot to clear our podcast from their auto-downloader. So they're just downloading a podcast that they forgot they had. Oh, wait, what's this? And why do I have 100 podcasts?
Wait, way to be cynical.
We have 5 loyal listeners.
Well, actually, I like doing this, and I like hearing that people enjoy it.
Well,
I
I think we have something like 900 listeners.
Ah, that's good.
Yeah.
But they're all silent, or they forgot to talk, or they don't speak English. Thank you, Ralph. You know, if it's easier for you, you can write it to us in German.
I will read it in German.
Yeah, too. Anyways. I have to do the... To put it on this. Yeah, and I forgot to put it on the podcast notes, damn it. So let me go back. This is going to be fun to edit. Well, it's not as bad an edit as it was for the past few things, actually. And you know
what? Yeah, last week was terrible.
I don't cut and paste people. I actually read it. Okay. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history article. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us in iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
I am at Alpha Shard.
And if you listen to me talk, I will let people know when I'm on Twitch or Mixer or whatever, and they can watch. I promise. Actually, you know, I really should say my Twitch thing. I think I am on Twitch, Jonah Falcon NYC, if I remember correctly.
I can't remember what mine is. I haven't logged in a while.
Oh, I think mine's Alpha Shard. I'm all things Alpha Shard.
Yeah, it's Jonah Falcon NYC, and as a matter of fact, one episode of Mass Effect, me playing it, is on there. So you're Alpha Shard on Twitch?
Yep.
Oh, okay, so there you go. If you want to watch my latest playthrough of Mass Effect, which was a long time ago, I think it was like almost a year ago, go ahead. 362 people watched it.
I'm still Johnny Chugs on Twitch, so there you go.
There you go. It's hey, guess what? Except, well, you two have your Twitter handle as your thing, and mine is just my name with an NYC attached to it, which is, of course, outdated since I am no longer living in New York City. I'm living in LA now.
Yeah, but you're still a New Yorker. You can't change that.
I was just on a show called Lonely and Horny. It's a Vimeo show. I hope they... I pretended to get drunker and drunker and drunker during this wedding party as it went on. Maybe you'll, if you watch it, they're starting their second season. If you watch me on November 7th, I already said this last week, you can see me as Robert Philibosian on Law & Order, The Menendez Files.
Nice.
So, anyway.
Well, as long as we're shamefully shilling our stuff, if y'all liked what I said about it at the beginning of the show, check that out. It should be out by the time this podcast launches.
It has a website, doesn't it?
It had a Kickstarter, but other than that, it's on Steam, and I think it's only on Steam right now for Mac and PC. It's going to be coming out on Wednesday, I think, the 22nd officially. So, yeah, it's going to be out by the time this one launches. If you liked what I said about it, give it a look. Maybe check it out, because I know Kevin would appreciate that. He's a good friend of mine. All the people that poured all their heart into that over the last couple of years, it's come out pretty good.
You know, it's not a shill if you actually say that you know the person. You're splooging it for them. A shill is when they pretend not to know them.
Ah. Well, then this is just shameless promotion. Check out Hack.
I don't think any of us have any shame. Well, maybe Scott has some shame, but I know I don't have any shame.
If you're doing it for a friend, I don't think there's any shame.
Especially if you say it's your friend. By the way, Battleship Brigade is now out. And that's
also a really cool looking game.
Yeah, I played it at E3, and basically, it's combination cooking game and side-scrolling JRPG.
Yeah. Which
and
is rad.
And I might as well have a turn as well. If you're interested in Turncast, you can check it out at polycast.net.
I always say that. Especially when I'm on it. I mean, I'm occasionally on it. As, you know, Dan hasn't been on this podcast in a long while. I'll see if he wants, if he has any free time at all to join us for something.
Well, he's getting married soon, so that a lot of his time is being eaten up.
Everybody's getting married, it seems like.
Yep.
Titan Quest Anniversary Edition is $4 on Steam. I don't know why I said that. I'm just saying that out loud. Oh, actually, you know what? One game that I'm really interested in, which I haven't played, but I heard a lot of good things about, in the same vein as Papers, Please, is that This War of Mine Anniversary Edition is available right now for $4 on Steam.
Cool.
Have either of you played this War of Mine?
No, but I always hear really good things about it. That is one of those things that I've heard, like, people compare it in a similar vein to Shell-Shocked Vietnam.
Oh, okay. But this... Papers, Please as well. I mean, they're both story, what's it called, talking about the reality of war. For those who don't know what this War of Mine is that you play a survivor in the middle of a war and you're scavenging for stuff. First, you're scavenging empty places, like abandoned grocery stores and all that stuff. But soon you have to start making some serious moral choices without giving anything away. Yeah, you might have to steal from people and people who can't afford to have things stolen from them, like old people and children.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, $4, I'm probably going to pick it up.
Yeah, it looks like for $4, yeah, I would check that out. Okay. I always hear good things about it.
You know what game I'm thinking about buying, even though it's still $20, and that's Rocket League, just to play it. I mean, people who said they weren't sure they would actually enjoy it actually enjoyed it.
Rocket League is one of those things where it's like super easy to pick up, and then you can just like decide how much you want to get into it. Like if you want to just like mess around casually, you can. If you want to go like full on, all in on like learning the skills, figuring out like how best to use the twirls and the jumps and the rocket jumps. And
you know, I heard that the community is not a bunch of assholes, so that's a plus.
Yeah,
it's a plus.
Yeah. And also cross-platform play. Hey, that's a game we could play. We could be one bad team playing experts and watch us get our asses kicked.
That would be, you know, it would be a cool setup for an esports challenge. Have teams that all play on different systems, like one person plays on PC, another person plays on PS4, another person plays on Switch, and they all have to just make it work.
There's a problem there, though. You won't be able to play on PS4 because Sony doesn't want them playing with Xbox One.
Ah, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah, you forgot. By the way, another game that I started playing, even though I had it in my thing for the past 4 years, is The Binding of Isaac, and I decided, you know, why not? It's basically Smash TV, except dark and depressing. I don't know if it's depressing. It's more like just very weird.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, play games, be cool, y'all.
Oh, and also have a nice Thanksgiving for those of you who are living in the United States.
Absolutely. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everyone.